You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. Beware,
IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop, episode 300. I am your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined today by Justin Davis,
Scoop!
Greg Miller,
Scoop!
Brian Altano, and we have a studio filled with our wonderful fans. Very, very excited for this day. Like we were saying, this day has been 8 years in the making. We started GameScoop 8 years ago.
You started GameScoop 8 years ago. None of us were here.
Well, you joined us shortly thereafter.
Right. I was a fan before I came.
And famously, on your first appearance, you exclaimed "Scoot," and you're like, "Nope, that's not."
I was funny from the beginning at IG.
Yeah. Funny. Not funny, haha.
No, but funny looking, sure. No.
No, I was hired at IGN in April of 2006, so this month is also my 8-year anniversary at IGN. Wow. Yeah. Hired in April, and then I think we started GameScoop in June or July that summer, and I've hosted every episode except for two, I think, except for the first one, which was hosted by David Adams.
Yeah.
And then one random episode Greg hosted when I was out of town.
Right. So. Well, that was the problem, right? Like, it was one of those things where I don't think you don't get enough credit in IGN lore for the fact that GameScoop is your, like, one thing, right? Like, if Brian or I aren't here one day, Up at Noon would continue to go on. Like, if Brian has to go to New York...
It'd be really bad.
It would be horrible, but, like, you know, when I was sick, like, you know, we had somebody step up to do the interview so there was still a show that 1 week, right? For GameScoop, for a long time, it was like, well, Damon's the only one who knows how to do any of this, so Damon's taking Friday off, there's no GameScoop, right? And so that was the big thing, that, like, you've done this from the get-go, and, like, you've helped it evolve to where it is now, and it's amazing. You've done awesome stuff.
And if any randoms have just stumbled in here, what you're watching is IGN's video game talk show.
Hey, randos.
Yeah. Been going on for 8 years now, 300 episodes. We record once a week, usually goes up on Fridays. We just get together like this and just talk about what's going on in video games.
This episode's only been going on for a few minutes, though, right?
That's true. Yeah. Okay. This episode's for sure. We have
a really
big topic to discuss, and we're going to be taking your questions live, and we're going to be giving away a bunch of stuff later on. I just want to show you what we are going to be giving away. The grand prize today is going to be a PlayStation 4.
It's awesome.
With this limited edition of Watch Dogs. So this is very cool. We have more copies of the game to give away too. They have like a few more copies of the game to give away. We have Watch Dogs shirts. We've got these custom GameScoop Xbox One.
These are awesome.
And PlayStation 4.
Yeah, I want that exactly.
You can get them at evilcontrollers.com, but customize them however you want.
And then we have a bunch of these laser prints. I didn't know laser printing was a thing, but let me show you this. There's only 200 of these. These apparently are valued at $200.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, if I can get it out of here. And the artist is Alex Ross. Greg, you know
Alex
Ross?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want that. So, I have an Alex Ross painting hanging in my bedroom.
We have a few of these to give away, too. Yeah. So
we also have these guys, right? The toasty sticker decals.
Yeah, what are those? Explain what those are, Greg.
I'll go to this one. Hey, Sean. So PlayStation 4 has this light bar that a lot of people don't enjoy. And you can place stickers like these over the light bar, and then it lights up, and it'll display whatever this is. Like this game. Give me that PlayStation 4 controller. Why we talk, I'll put one on there.
There you go.
Sorry for the person who wins this and didn't want the light bar.
You gotta put it on really well.
I'm gonna nail it.
Do
it. Toast.
You may be wondering how could I win these awesome things. We usually take listener mail on GameScoop. But now, since we're live streaming, we can take your questions live. Just tweet them at me on Twitter, at DameZero. We'll pick good questions that we think would spark good conversation, and then you'll win a prize pack of a bunch of this stuff. So.
And bam. Look at that. There it is.
Yeah? Looks really sharp. Like,
hold on. Sean wasn't ready for me that time. Look at me. I'm that guy from Reading Rainbow. LeVar Burton.
Never wore those glasses on that show.
Why would you just say Star Trek?
Wasn't there a crossover at some point?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. When he crossed over to Star Trek.
Captain Picard, I've taken a look. It's in a book.
All right, before we jump into our big topic, let's take a look back at a couple classic GameScoop moments. There was a time that Greg got some bad Ghostbusters news. Oh, it's already...
No time for intros!
This is the time Greg got some bad Ghostbusters news and the time I got a Nintendo representative to admit something surprising. Let's take a look.
Hey, Greg, what's up?
Not much, Damon. Getting ready a little bit early. Never too early to plan for Game of the Year.
Yeah, Greg, have a seat here for me.
What's up, big guy?
I've got some bad news. Activision has announced they're not going to be publishing Ghostbusters.
No, man. Don't do this to me. Not now,
I'm
man.
Sorry, Greg.
I just got back from Comic-Con. I saw it there. I played
it. Here for you. You know I'm always here for you.
This is bull. You're lying. Don't lie, dude. Why would you lie?
I'm afraid.
Are you a god?
Damon here with IGN GameScoop reporting from the Nintendo DSi launch event at Universal City Walk in Los Angeles. So what's this fandangled new DSi system all about?
Well, the new DSi is a lot like the old one, but this one actually has the ability to take pictures. It has a built-in camera. There's a camera on both sides. So if you're looking at it, you can take it. It also has a memory card ability.
Where do I put the UMD disc?
On the side. So, I mean, you can store your music on here. You can also access the internet and buy songs and games straight to your DSi.
So the Nintendo DSi uses UMD discs.
Yeah.
That poor hired employee for her hourly wage can go to hell.
Okay. Big question to discuss today. As we said, GameScoop has been running for 8 years now. So I want to know, what do you guys think is the biggest thing to happen to video games in the past 8 years? Greg, let's start with you.
I'm going to say the rise of the independent developer. Thank you. One independent developer in the audience, everybody.
It's Greg Atlas.
No, you know, I've been here 7 years, right? So when I got here, I remember the big talk at the time, the thing we talked about the most, it seemed like, week in, week out, was this thing called Xbox Live Arcade, right? And what game had come to it? What is this? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And that was like our first taste of, like, all of a sudden, we weren't waiting for just discs, right? We weren't waiting for the next big AAA release. And it was, you know, it was a drop of water out of the faucet, right? But then...
Like a steady stream of smaller games, so you mean?
I'm getting there. I'm saying at the beginning, it was just a drop. It's not like it is now, right? It was that drop. And then all of a sudden, when the iPhone hit, right, they turned on the faucet. And that's when there was, like, all of a sudden, like right now, right, there are more games than we can possibly keep up with.
Yes.
Brian, you and I used to be able to play everything that came out.
And we would try to, right? Yeah. And talk about it the next day.
Exactly.
And it's like, hey, Greg, did you play those games last night? No, there was 45,000 of them.
Exactly, right? There's too much released. And when iPhone hit and it was like, for $99, anybody can develop games and apps, a lot of people took that and jumped on. And as they did that, Steam was already rising, obviously. There's all this stuff. Yep. But then they made it easier. And now you look to where we are today, right? PlayStation 4, all these different systems that are like, PlayStation 4 is lifeblood, right? And Xbox One is trying to get in on that. And indies are now such a huge deal, but 8 years ago, they for sure weren't.
Sure, 8 years ago, you know, two guys working from home couldn't put a game onto, you know, the Xbox 360 or the Wii.
Yeah, right? It wasn't possible. Yeah. You would see stuff like Alien Hominid on the GameCube. It was like a huge deal, and you didn't get games like that anymore, and it cost $30 or $40. And now you see stuff like that come out for $5 or $10 on PS4 or Steam.
Mm-hmm. It seems like, I think maybe Braid was the first, like, breakthrough one. That was the one it seemed like everyone was talking about, at least.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those XBLA games.
Right.
And I like that, I think it was fine for the time that XBLA really put an emphasis on, like, $10. You know, like, these games are all going to be $10 or $15, but I'm glad that we've gotten beyond that, and on the PS4... I'm glad that games are just games.
Get it out of your system.
Yeah, exactly.
And so there can be like, you know, there can be a free-to-play game on PS4 or $10 or $20 or, you know, you can get a $60. You know, you can download. I downloaded Lego Marvel instead of buying it. And like now, there's that sort of barrier has been broken down where games can come in at any price point. And so every developer can do what makes sense for them.
Well, going back to how Damon is always ahead of his time, I mean, that was what I loved about On the Download, right? He did a show for IGN that was about the best downloadable games.
Yeah.
And then eventually Damon's like, well, everything's downloadable. Yeah. I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah.
When we started, downloadable things were like their own thing.
It was quirky.
Yeah.
It was
unique.
Like this, yeah.
But now it's just,
they were less than even in a way, right, or whatever.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the thing about indies is that they can go direct to consumer now. Like, that's really what changed it, is they didn't have to, like, how challenging is it to get a disc printed up and you need to have a publisher and you need to get it in Target, like, to make any money? Like, it's impossible for a small team to do something like that, or almost impossible. And so you can't really underestimate, like, how important, you know, strong digital distribution platforms were for something like that.
Yeah. I remember a few years ago we would say, it's a downloadable game. And that was almost like being, like... It's crippled.
Or the review, the review would be like, not bad for a downloadable game.
Yeah, not bad for a downloadable
really
game. Yeah, like she races good for a girl. It was like such a stupid thing. Such a stupid thing to say. And now everything's kind of meshed together. And when you look on the storefronts for these games and these game consoles, you'll see something like Tomb Raider next to something like Limbo or something else.
Yeah, for sure. On Xbox, it's Peggle like right next to the other games.
I love that. PlayStation
4 is doing a huge push right now for Octodad,
yeah,
which is awesome.
Totally. And I love that we've gotten to that point, and then I think the audience has come with that, right? And they haven't, that stigma's been lost on them too. So a few years ago when we were like, Limbo's out, and it's probably the game of the month. We're like, but it doesn't have any colors in it. there's no sound
Damon
effects.
Damon played the main character in Limbo.
I did all the mocap.
Yeah, it's a beautiful game. You can beat it in a few hours. And, you know, it didn't have online multiplayer. And it didn't have, you know, death matches and, like, DLC and all this stuff like that. And you could just finish it. And you're like, that was awesome. And it really stuck with me. Oh, and it was made by a small group of people.
Yeah.
So. It's like, it's totally viable because since it is $10, you're not upset when you're done with that experience in 3 hours. Like, you play it once, and I'm probably not going to play Limbo again, but it was worth my time and money at the time.
Yeah.
And it was just awesome. Like, the reality of being able to distribute digitally is totally what made stuff like that possible.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think indie games replaced the mid-tier game?
Yeah.
You know, not that it used to be, there were like AAA games that would be tentpole releases throughout the year, and then you get smaller stuff.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time, right? Like, I always talk about that spectrum. Yeah. Like, now there's indies, there were mid tier stuff like your THQs, and then there was AAA.
Yeah. THQ's not,
and then
anymore.
That all fell out because finally it got to this part where the business model for video games was not sustainable for you to put out a game that is crap or mediocre. You know what I mean? Or not,
or
that
just
great.
Not going to sell.
Right.
5 million copies.
Right, exactly.
It's not that different than movies, where like the high-end, high-budget films cost $250 million to make now, and there's fewer of them. And then you see, you know, people like Woody Allen can continue making, you know, whatever they want to make. You know, there's this independent film like Sundance Movies.
Sure.
Yeah, I would definitely say that the middle has fallen out of the games industry.
I just think there's a broader, in movies, there's like a broader spectrum of budgets. There's like big budgets, and then, you know, there's like your $200 million movies, but there's also $100 million, your $30 million.
Like, I don't know. I don't really feel like I see that many. Yeah, I mean, there totally could be. But I think the point about video games is totally well taken. Like, these companies that are in the middle, like a company like THQ, they got squeezed out by... I would say the indies, is they get more sophisticated and more complex. Like, indie developers aren't just two dudes in a basement. Like, they could be a team of 20, you know, working on a game with a small budget. You know, you see companies like the people that did the Kickstarter... Who developed
the one guy?
The one guy
in the Kickstarter.
No, the Fallout New Vegas developer. Obsidian. Yeah, so they're doing their Planescape Torment like pseudo sequel, and that got funded for like $5 million. Like, that's totally indie. It counts as indie, but it's not the same as, like, you know, a dude making a game and releasing it on the App Store.
Right.
Like, they've sort of replaced that middle ground, in my opinion.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, now it just seems like there's AAA games and then just indie games today. Right. So, like, PlayStation 4 has 100 games coming out this year. But how many of them are big AAA releases, right?
Yeah,
it's like 100 indie games.
There just aren't as many big games anymore because there's this sort of like race to the top of the ceiling, right? And like it's we're looking for stuff to be more and more realistic and more like this is like, oh, you can run your fingers through the blades of grass and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And these guys are like, hey, it's Squaxel. You play as a square and you beat up circles, and it sold 4 million copies. And they're like, great, this is the game of the year. Like, I like that that's happening now. I like that artists and independent game designers and creative people can get together with a small group of passionate, like-minded guys and go, we're going to make something totally crazy and totally disruptive, and we're not trying to take away from, like, the Call of Duties. Like, that stuff will always exist, I think, in some way. But it's awesome that there's this new movement right now.
Yeah, it's awesome, like, that people can make games that aren't for everybody.
Yeah,
like, most people aren't going to like this, but 10,000 people will, and that'll pay my salary, and that'll let me make the next game.
Well, it's exciting to see, I think, established creators going to different lengths to get their game out faster and get it to the people they want, right? Because there are concessions if your game is published by Sony or Microsoft, right? They come in and they're like, well, this is fine, but change this and do that.
And it's got to make money.
You see, like, David Jaffe or Ken Levine or these people who want to get back, let's make a smaller game the way we want it, get it out quicker, and move on to another project.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't say the PlayStation 2 price drop to $99 was the biggest thing to happen.
It was probably the biggest thing for me at the time.
I don't know if you remember, you were pretty excited at the time. We have a clip actually here that we can get into.
What a great Greg way.
All right, so let me explain it to you again, all right? It needs to be a hat that's made out of money. The hat itself is going to be made out of cash money. How many times have you
It just happened, Street Meat! So many years! Just Tractor made it happen!
Let me call you back.
In the f***ing car, man! Let's go! This is gonna be great!
This
PlayStation 2! Oni!
I know!
Smugglers Run! Magnitude! Pop this sh-
No! I don't get what the big deal is. The original Xbox has been $99 for like 5 years now.
Yeah, I haven't even seen it on store shelves in a long time, so it must still be very popular.
It amazes me that all four of us in that video haven't been snapped up by a Hollywood studio to go make a motion picture
yet. It's so weird to see you as a fat, loud guy.
I know. I've changed a lot in 8 years.
Crazy.
It's fun. I'm wearing a Superman shirt, throwing comic books. How quaint.
Remember how nervous Clements was driving his car? That he wanted him to stop.
He begged Ty Root not to make him drive quickly, and Ty's like, you have to drive out of the parking lot quickly. And he's like, what if I get in a car accident?
Justin, what is the biggest thing to happen to video games in the past 8 years?
Man, 8 years is a long time. It's crazy. This makes me think about it. What was I doing in 2006? I was still in Iowa. I hadn't moved to San Francisco yet. In terms of the video game industry, I think it's this continuing shift of the balance of power in video games is definitely shifting towards the Western world. Japan used to be like, when I used to get my copy of EGM magazine, and it would be like, what, like, crazy new video games are coming out of Japan, or like when a Final Fantasy game came out, that was the biggest thing on planet Earth, all over the world, and there are commercials on, you know, the evening television, and now, like, that's been replaced by, instead of Final Fantasy, we have The Witcher and Skyrim. Like, Skyrim sold with like 15 million copies or something insane like that. The companies that are left, like, you know, Capcom, Konami, Namco, like, are they still as relevant and hot? Like, do people care about them as much? Like, I don't want to take anything away from, like, Tekken or Street Fighter. Like, those games are big deals, but...
Yeah.
Like, I think about... Do you remember the Capcom 5? Those five GameCube games?
Yep.
Yeah.
Where it was like, it was going to save the GameCube, and Resident Evil, and PN03, and these other games.
It became the Capcom, like, 2.5.
Well, sure. Like, half the games never even came out, but, like, everybody lost their minds when those games were announced. And, like, what if Capcom announced 5 Xbox One games today? Like,
yeah, I mean, it wouldn't even happen. right?
Right.
It blows my mind. It's so interesting you say that.
Do they even have five games?
Yeah, like when we grew up, it was all Japan. Japan was just like this. And I remember when we at IGN a few years ago, there was this guy, he came in, he was like a contractor, and he was like fixing the lighting. And he's like, oh, do you guys know about that PlayStation 4?
Right.
And we're like, yeah, it comes out in a few months. We're really excited. And he's like, I bet Japan's had it for years. We're like, nope. Yeah, I think they got it after us.
Yeah, like 6 months after
us. Yeah, 6 months after us. So it was kind of interesting to see that power shift that's happened.
I mean, it used to be that way, right? Like games would come out.
It was this mystical land where just video games came from.
Yeah, we were always
video games. Everything launched there first, and then came over here.
We were always like four Final Fantasies behind. Yeah. You know, like their Mario 2 had different characters in it, and we're like, what the hell is all this?
So I think there's really two things that I attribute this to, and you know, I don't necessarily have it all figured out. But when I thought about this, first of all, Japan seems unable or unwilling to release video games. Like they don't. In the time that BioWare released the entire Mass Effect trilogy, Square Enix has been working on Final Fantasy XV. Like they announced that game in 2006. And to be fair, it has changed. It wasn't Final Fantasy XV at the time, yada yada. But like, there's other examples of that.
Oh, I mean, like, you know, the one Colin always brings up, right, is Last Guardian. Sure. It's been worked on the entire lifespan of the Uncharted and now Last of Us franchise. Like, all of those games have come out in the time that Last Guardian's been being worked on.
Yeah, so like, I don't know what's going on over there. Like, there's less people buying consoles generally, so a lot of Japanese game developers have moved to mobile. Damon, you were telling me that TGS has seen a big shift.
It's basically a mobile game show now.
You know? I remember when you came back from a TGS and we were like, how was it going? You're like, everything was mobile. Like, it was like nothing was happening. There was nothing for us to play.
I mean, you and I have been to TGS together before, right? It used to be like a Japanese E3.
Yeah.
It used to be like console games.
Yeah. I think the one we went to was like The Last Gasp. That was when they had Peace Walker and they gave out that demo and we put it on IGN and all this stuff. But like, that was like the last big thing I thought that came out of TGS.
That's part of why, in IGN, we wrote a news story where Sony said that part of the reason they delayed the PS4 in Japan was because there was no games from Japanese developers. Mm. It wasn't just that. They needed to allocate, you know, consoles to other territories and yada yada, but that was a part of it. It's just like no one is releasing games for these next-gen consoles. They just don't have it together from a development standpoint. So from a business standpoint, a company like EA or Activision is super good at like annualizing games. Like, love or hate Assassin's Creed, like they hit this quality threshold. They're pretty good games. They release them every year without fail. Japan seems incapable of doing that. Like, you know, a Capcom or Namcom or Konami.
Good old Namcom.
They just merged again while you guys were watching. We can't keep up.
So
Nambamcom.
So do you think it's like the inability, or do you think it's like the unwillingness to sort of keep serving this audience that they're maybe not really interested in? I mean, a lot of it is like big action games and big shooter games, and I don't really think that's really in line with what they want to do in Japan.
Well, that's what I mean. They're like retreating back into their like Japanese turtle shells, where like Japanese developers make games for Japanese people, even though the rest of the world is not, like the rest of the world's buying Assassin's Creed and Call of Duty and FIFA.
Right.
Like, but is there anything wrong with that?
No, there's nothing wrong with that.
The thing you talk about, right, is especially like on the Vita, right, how many Japanese games come out and people like Atlus or, you know, NIS will continue to make these really hardcore JRPG niche games that you'd think, like, nobody will touch that with a 10-foot pole, but they put it out and they set their sales expectations at a set that, like, we'll turn a profit on this because we're not coming out like Tomb Raider, where Square was like, this thing's going to sell so many millions. It only sold how many millions? Failure. You know what I mean? Like, if you set a realistic expectation, you can succeed.
For sure. It's not like a value judgment of, like, I love Disgaea along with Damon. Like, I love those games. I'm going to buy and play every single one. But in terms of, like, relevance in the industry, like, overall, like, who's impacting the world of video games and moving it forward, I definitely feel like they've ceded that leadership position. They don't seem very interested, and they just kind of want to keep doing what they've been doing, and now all the innovation happens. You know, the indie scene all happens over here, too.
Interesting.
Japan did have games like Cave Story and stuff like that, but again, like that balance of power has sort of shifted.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is a seismic shift. It had started in the PS2.
Yeah, Xbox, even earlier. Yeah.
Xbox era. First of all, you've got this Western-made console finally in the Xbox, and the best-selling games on PS2, like in the top 10, you've got, you know, GTA 3 and San Andreas and Vice City. And you've got God of War, so these are like Western-developed games that are some of the best-selling games. So it like started then, but then the past 8 years, last generation, it's just...
It's real fascinating, right? Because you figure all the Western developers that are changing things, doing crazy stuff now, grew up on Japanese games, right? Yeah. And that's the thing, that they took it and went with it and ran with it, and this is what we have now. Which is what I always talk about now, that it's going to be so crazy in 25, 30 years from now, the people who grew up playing Titanfall and Uncharted or whatever.
Is it going to be the South Americans that take over? The dudes in Eastern Europe?
Is that who I got to keep our eye on?
Yeah, right. Exactly. That Brazilian game
that contractor team. Guy's going to be like, the PlayStation 12, I bet South America's had it for
So objectively, like, they seem unable to release games at the same clip and quality as the Western world. Subjectively, just on a game design standpoint, like, I think about something like Metal Gear. Like, Metal Gear Solid on the PS1 was a huge deal, and now, like, the story makes no sense, and the cutscenes are 30 minutes long, and I just feel like they haven't kept up in the same way. But that's totally subjective. Like, if someone still loves that style of game, like, I get that.
Now, before we get to Brian's pick, earlier we saw Greg struggling with the news that Activision would not publish Ghostbusters. But that story actually had a happy ending. Who ended up publishing it?
And it came out, it was good. So good that Atari's like, we're done. We're going out on a high note.
Yeah, Greg reviewed the game and it was good and he liked it. So we actually have a clip of what Greg decided to do with his life after that. So now we can actually know where Greg's been all these years. Let's take a look.
Dude, Damon. What the hell is going on with Greg? He's giving away everything on his desk.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's go check it out.
Ryan, I want you to have these cranberries.
Are you sure, dude?
They're my favorite. They've been good to me. They'll be good to you.
I'll put them on the cake.
I miss you.
Greg,
Oh, thank God, Nate, you're here. I want you to have my TV.
Oh, my God.
I want you to have my red vine.
Holy crap. Greg, no, you love your red vine. What's going on?
Damon, I'm going to have to go away for a while. I'm sorry. See, it took 25 years to get a really great Ghostbusters game, and hell, I reviewed 5 versions of them last week and did a head-to-head. So I figure it's another 2 decades till we get another really good Ghostbusters game, and by then I'll be dead of a heart attack from all the chicken wings I eat. So my good friend, Craig Harris, has agreed to put me in a cryogenic freeze state until the next round of Ghostbusters games are around.
Oh, I see. You need help getting in your freeze unit?
Sure do, Damon. Open the chamber.
Get on in there, Greg.
Craig, thank you so much for doing this. Damon, I'll always love you. All right, buddy? Yeah. I want you to have this copy of NBA 07 on PSP.
Wow.
Tell Guinness I think he's ugly.
Watch your head. You want to help me with the chair here?
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. There we go.
Perfect. You know, Craig, this freezing unit looks a lot like a recycling bin.
Oh, it is. I was just sick of hearing him talk about Ghostbusters all the time.
Let the freezing begin!
Man. IGN used to be weird.
I can't believe we used to do that stuff.
Right. Now, like, all the comments would just be, where's the gameplay?
What
slow
are you doing?
News day,
IGN.
Slow news day, IGN.
Yeah, for sure. Viewers, remember, we're going to be taking your questions live here in just a few minutes. Tweet your questions at me, at DameZero on Twitter. We'll pick really good questions, and you'll be receiving Watch Dogs prize packs, including a PS4 and a copy of the limited edition of Watch Dogs. All right, Brian.
Hi.
You're up to bat. Biggest thing to happen to video games in the past 8 years.
So I'm actually going to counter everything you just said.
Uh-oh.
No, crap!
Because I think the biggest thing that happened in the last 8 years was Nintendo. And they're Japanese, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
In 2006, Nintendo put out the Nintendo DS Lite, right? Which was like...
Yeah.
There was the DS, which some of us had, most of us hated.
Yeah.
And we're like,
yeah.
What is this ugly thing? It folded weird.
That is really ugly.
It looked
really
like one of those old computers from like the 90s or something like that. And then the DSi came out, and it shipped 93 million units worldwide. Had Nintendogs, New Super Mario Brothers, Brain Age, Mario Kart, Animal Crossing, Pokemon, Zelda games, all this stuff that was happening.
It invented the selfie.
It's true, yeah.
And the distorted lens.
And making beautiful women look worse. And turning them into cats. So it was a really interesting time to be a gamer because we were looking at Nintendo that was kind of split in half. Yeah. And they were doing totally awesome stuff for people like everyone in this room, and then they were doing stuff for our moms. And we're your mom would be like, I gotta play Brain Age every day, or yep. I gotta pet this
That's
Nintendo.
True. My mom had a DS for exactly. Yeah. She played Brain Age like she was that woman, that middle-aged woman. Yeah.
She's like, I gotta work on my brain. You're like, I gotta beat Mario. Like, what are you doing with my thing? Put it down. And that was kind of huge, and it sort of set them off in this weird direction. And that's what I love about Nintendo is they've kind of always embodied that quirky Japanese-ness. of being like, we're going to do crazy things, we're going to move the medium forward, and we're going to do whatever we want, and it's going to be polished, and it's going to be beautiful and wonderful, and, you know, we're going to put out as many as we need to every year. Like, I think that Nintendo didn't really have a problem putting out, you know, we were talking about before, it took these guys 5 years to make a game.
Sure. Nintendo's, yeah, I wanted to point out that they're kind of the one exception.
Yeah.
Like, they seem to have it together.
They got their stuff together. So they can put out a Zelda every few years, they can put out Mario every few years. In 2006, also, the Nintendo Wii launched worldwide.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. 100 million units shipped. 100 million! That's crazy.
Yeah.
And again, they did the same thing. We're like, you know, some of us were playing Galaxy, some of us were playing Twilight Princess and stuff like that, and others of us were playing Wii Sports or exercising. And Wii Sports was great, right? Like, it did this thing where, for the first time ever, you could make... There was this thing that it was a create a character mode that everybody understood.
Right.
And no one had that before. Every time you'd start out, you'd start like one of those THQ wrestling games. You'd be like, make a character. And you'd be in there for like 2 hours, you'd stretching out the eyebrows and stuff like that. Nintendo got that down. All of a sudden, you know, you and your mom again, if she wasn't playing Brain Age, were bowling together. And it was totally insane. 2011, the Nintendo 3DS launched worldwide, which now we're sort of looking at the back end of things. Like, it gets a little different for them now, because now in 2012, the Wii U launched, which, you know, it's a slight footnote. 6 million units sold worldwide for the Wii U. 46 million for the 3DS. 3DS, we got stuff like Pokemon, Mario Kart 7, Super Mario 3D Land, Monster Hunter, Animal Crossing, Ocarina of Time, Luigi's Mansion, A Link Between Worlds. They invented Street Pass.
Of course, in 1 week, you get Mario Golf.
And Mario Golf. They invented Street Pass, which is like, you were upset. We were like counting down the clock to start the show, and Greg's going through them on his 3DS. It's one of those things where you can't go to an event now without it being part of it.
Right.
And Nintendo's insanely Japanese, and they're insane. And little by little, they've just been sort of, in a good
Nintendo,
way.
Nintendo, insanely Japanese?
And insane.
Little by little. Just Reggie with like Joker face paint.
He's got another head on the back of his head. Like, oh. They've just gotten away with doing totally crazy, really fun things, and they kind of go by the beat of their own drum, and I appreciate that.
But where does that lead to? You know what I mean?
I was going to say, like, it's crazy that since they're traded on, like, the stock market, it's so much like, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you had the biggest video game console of all time,
yep.
But now your new one's not doing so hot, so
you're dead. It's over.
Exactly.
Just publish software.
See, and this is why it was tough for me to look back at the last 8 years, because like you said, like, 8 years... is like 8,000 years in some other industries, you know? Like the paper writing industry. I'm sure they're like, oh, paper's...
Paper writing?
Paper writing? Paper,
yeah, you use paper, roll it into another paper, and then... But when we look at games... I didn't go to paper college, right? When you look at the games industry and we look back, it's always like December every year, we go, oh, let's look at the game of the year. Yep. It's so hard to remember stuff from January.
Right.
And just like when we look back at the last 8 years, it's really hard to think about stuff from... 8 years ago,
yeah.
You know? But yeah, the Nintendo was on top with the Wii and the DS, and the 3DS was the best-selling system last year. And this year, we're like, well, now what? What have you done for me recently, right? And it's kind of a problem, but I think that they've done enough and learned enough to come back on top someday.
Well, yeah, so, like, what's your... Are you saying Nintendo's the biggest thing to happen?
Just the word Nintendo.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I think just them as a company.
What's the biggest story in 8 years is Nintendo?
I would have to say the Wii in bringing everybody in who hadn't played video games in decades and getting them to play video games again was probably the most important thing that could happen. Apple saw that and they go, oh man, we can do that? Boom, everybody came in. And they totally stole the thunder from that, you know? And I think that's where you started seeing people playing Angry Birds on the train again. And like it was back when we were growing up, you would see a guy playing, like a businessman would play Tetris on an airplane. You're like, wow, he's got a Game Boy too. And he probably could own my dad, he's so rich.
Here's my question. Do we think the success of the Wii and so many third parties flooding it with crap leads to the middle falling out?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one led to another. And we actually, like, the motion controls thing is a weird footnote. Because there was a few years where we were like, this is going to be the future. And then we were like, this sucks. And then we were like, I hope this is never the future. And then it was like, it isn't the future. And it all went away. And yeah, luckily it all went away. But I think they had to be there to try that and do that and move it in that direction.
Nintendo's been saying, ever since my first E3 was 11 years ago, and that was the GameCube, and they said, you know, we don't see Microsoft and Sony as competitors.
Yep.
Sure. And everyone's like, oh, like, Nintendo, you're so stupid. You know, but then with the Wii, that finally came true. And you're like, oh, I get it. Like, I understand now what they're talking about. They're totally doing their own thing. when you think about making Miis, like, you think about a character creator, and, like, you're trying to, like, how big do you want their forehead ridge to be? And I'm like, I just can't, like, I can't, it doesn't make any sense, but the Mii's so simple and accessible and fun, and then it totally does look like you, and that's, like, a perfect personification of, like, what Nintendo's been up to these days.
I think to this day, if you look at the Kinect, they're still sort of chasing that.
Yeah.
They're like, check out Kinect Sports Rivals. And we're like, no.
Yeah. I used to always, I always thought that was like marketing, or that was like, you know, PR speak of like, we're not paying attention to what, you know, the Xbox is doing. But now, like, I kind of believe that that's the truth, and Nintendo genuinely is sort of trying to forge their own path. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think that's a good call.
Thanks.
The Nintendo's a huge story. Greg, remember Rock Band Unplugged?
How could I forget? One of the best PSP games of all time.
Remember, Rock Band was a thing. For a few minutes.
A lot of people, for a few minutes.
We loved Rock Band. Then they made Rock Band Unplugged for PSP.
Yeah.
Didn't use any instruments, had no multiplayer of any kind. We thought it was a little strange. We made an infomercial about it a few years back. I think we got a clip of that. How many times has this happened to you?
I'm going to E3 in a week and I really want to play Rock Band, but I can't fit all this stuff. And with airline costs these days, who's got the money to ship it all? There has to be an easier way!
There is.
There is? Finally.
It's called Rock Band Unplugged, and it's available for your PSP on-the-go video game program.
The PlayStation Portable on-the-go video game program? I have one of those leveling my kitchen table.
Well, after you update 17 firmwares, you'll be all set to play Rock Band Unplugged, featuring some of the greatest bands in the history of the universe, such as Blink 182 and Three Doors Down. There are also some bands called Nirvana and the Who.
But where do I plug in my instruments?
You can throw away that junk. Rock Band Unplugged does away with all the instruments, so now there's nothing in between you and the music.
I can feel the music!
Feels good, doesn't it?
I can't wait to play with you!
There's no multiplayer of any kind.
That's kind of dumb.
Rock Band Unplugged for your PSP.
Rock Band Unplugged is actually an awesome game, and I really wish they'd remake it for Vita and PS.
I was gonna say, frequency and amplitude were so good.
Right.
It came to consoles, right?
It was Rock Band Blitz, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But none of you bought it. And now we're not getting any more. No, you don't count.
All right, my my submission for what might be the biggest thing to happen to video games in the past 8 years would be Xbox Live.
Uh-huh.
And the socialization of video game consoles.
Sure.
Yeah. So like before, you know, with my PlayStation, my Xbox, my GameCube, I turned it on. It was just me in my living room,
right,
all by myself, playing Resident Evil 4 or Disgaea. For 300 hours. Now after Xbox Live, I turn on my PS4, I can see all my friends are online, I can see what they're doing, I can see what they're watching. I've got ads, you know, suggesting I buy Doritos.
What you always wanted!
I know.
You take the good and the bad.
That part's a little weird, but you know, like, just being able to, like, it's not an isolated experience anymore.
Sure.
It's so easy to forget that before Xbox Live, like when Xbox Live was brand new and it's like every game has a demo, and that was a huge deal, and I downloaded demos for all these Xbox 360 launch games, and now it's just like become the standard. Like how quickly was it just like, no, this is just the way things are.
Do you remember the E3 when Microsoft was like, and check out our new demos on your Xbox today?
Yeah, you could just download
them. That was awesome.
You could download the E3 demos.
Cool. Yeah.
It's great.
And I know that every console has that service now, but the reason I say Xbox Live is because that was the first one, and I think Nintendo and Sony had to play catch up. It's just mind blowing to me that Xbox Live actually came to the first Xbox, but then they sort of really relaunched it with the Xbox 360. So Microsoft had this vision in mind; they were planning this all along for the 360. Sony put out the PlayStation 3 with no plan for like a social network in mind. It's crazy.
They'll sort of that.
Yeah, they're like, wow, this it's just like the PS2, but it's more powerful. Yeah. You're like, what?
And it's really expensive.
The Xbox 360 does what?
And the store is basically a web page that barely works. Great, Sony.
Yeah.
It's like that's what was actually next gen. Like it wasn't necessarily the graphics 100%. Or the Blu-ray drive. It was those social connected internet.
Being able
features.
To chat with each other while you play a different game, seeing what people were doing, going inviting, doing all these different, I mean, achievements, gamer scores, all the stuff.
Leaderboards. Like I wrote an op-ed for an older website that I used to work for that was about how Xbox Live brought back leaderboards, you know, mm-hmm. brought back like yeah. that feeling yeah, in yeah. the arcade of like my family owned a restaurant and I would like try to set all the high scores in like Donkey Kong and stuff. Yeah, and yeah. like, and then I played Geometry Wars for hours and hours and hours trying to beat my friends. What made that so interesting was it's meaningless to me to be like, I used to be 20,000th in the world and now I'm 18,000th. Right. But if that score was enough to like boost me ahead of my buddy, yeah. like that sort of contextual leaderboard was a huge deal.
And right. you could score by friend, it was over.
Yeah, yeah
exactly. To see whatever somebody else, so you come yeah. come to work and ask them how they did that. Like, wait a second, you're like 2 million ahead of me. What did you do different?
So it's like, now I'm playing Trials Fusion right now, and it's yeah. the exact same deal where like, it's like, okay, so I'm 1,000th on this course. And that's actually pretty good, because like, you know, there's 100,000 plus people playing Fusion. That game. But it's still not like, I don't, that number doesn't mean anything to me, except to know that if I were to pass you or Damon or someone like that, like yeah, that's yeah. super awesome.
Yeah.
Do you remember like growing up and someone would be like, oh man, he's the best Mario Kart player in the world? And it's like, well, no, he's not.
You mean
on our block?
On our block. On our block.
Which is basically the world.
Which is the world. And now you can just prove it and be like, no, you're like 80th millionth. Like, you're nothing. Yeah. Which was sort of like, it's sort of terrifying, but I agree. The second they let you sort by friend, then it was like, okay, well, I'll never be the best in the world, but yeah. I can beat all of you guys.
It's the smartest thing they did.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's been a bigger shift, generational shift for video game consoles. Because if you think of the NES, Super Nintendo, N64, it's all kind of the same, just getting like prettier and the yeah. games mm-hmm. bigger, right? But like now that like now I, when I log, you know, now I turn on my console and I can see what Greg's playing.
I think about I play a lot of Steam games right now that I actually play more on PC than either of my next gen consoles. And their integration of like I can see how many people on my Steam friends list own a game and how many of them play the game and how long they played a game. And I'm like, if there's a game I'm thinking about and I see three people I trust all, you know, spent 40 hours with it, like, I don't need to, that's replaced sort of, I don't necessarily need to talk to them about it. Like, just true. That discovery of games is really helpful true. As well mm-hmm. to be able to see what people are buying and playing and having access to all that. It's awesome.
All right, then. I think we'll turn it over to the listeners now. Actually, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hey, listeners.
And the viewers.
Hey, listeners.
We're finally having it out.
Viewers, if you have questions you would like us to answer live, tweet them at me, at DameZero, and that automatically enters you to win one of our Watch Dogs prize packs. But first, let's bring up Brant Range.
Rambling with Range!
We don't have our microphone. Do we have a microphone?
It's right here.
Oh, it's over here.
Range is on the complete other side of it, though.
I think
so get up and walk.
I think one of our...
This is you getting on camera, so you get to see... There he is!
The audience is real.
Oh, we're not using the Up at Noon soundboard.
Hi.
Hey. How are you doing, guys?
Good.
How are
you?
Awesome. Doing good. My goodness, I remember actually like listening to GameScoop back when I was a sophomore in high school, back in 06, so it's very strange to, I guess, be on episode 300. Spent a lot of time listening to you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
Greg knows how to clap. See, he's a good Up at Noon member.
Thank you very much. So my initial question is, when you're feeling nostalgic for games from your youth, which are the ones that you come back to time and time again? For me, it's always been Mega Man X for the Super Nintendo.
Ooh. Woo!
Wow! I mean, that's the game that I played. And now we have like the virtual console.
Yeah.
Sure.
This is actually not your question.
Yeah, I know. I had
you changed your question.
Oh, rambling with Rand. Who would have thunk it?
Okay, so games from our childhood that were nostalgic for that become.
Oh, back. God. Yeah, I mean, Super Mario Brothers and The Legend of Zelda.
Like those, the
originals, the OG 1985 Super Mario Brothers, that is my like ultimate comfort food for video games. That and one guy. that and the original Legend of Zelda, like it blows people's mind. We load up the Legend of Zelda in the office, and I know where every secret is.
Yeah.
Before we get in the first temple, I'm like, I know where every single rupee is, where all the bombs, where the upgrades are. Here's like 6 hearts. Here's the better sword. Here's the better tunic. All right, you're set. I have that all in my head. That's crazy.
Yeah, I would say anything on the NES. Maybe not any game specifically, but just like the sound of NES games.
Sure.
That 8-bit music. You know, I've put together like 8-bit radio shows for GameScoop before. Like, the sound of an NES game instantly will take me to my happy place.
Yep.
There's just nothing, like, I love that every game that was made for that console used the same sound chip. So every game sounds the same, right? Like, yep. It sounds like it was played by the same instrument. I kind of miss that, a dedicated sound chip for a game console.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. Yeah. Like, if every modern game now had to use the same, like, 12-piece right. orchestra.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or, like, a band. Like, you're doing all the music for video games
I know.
Now.
Like, that doesn't sound good, but I love the fact that every NES game sounds the same.
Yeah, it's crazy that music is so tied to like feelings of nostalgia and like taking you back in a way that, you know, some other senses aren't. I mean, mine are definitely, I grew up with the NES, but mine's probably SNES era games, you know, Super Mario World and Super Metroid. Yeah, I go back and play a Super Metroid probably once a year, I would say. Ghost House?
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to say Ghost House on Sega Master System or
really?
Ghostbusters probably on Sega Master System. But probably, it's not even, I mean, I was already in high school, but Metal Gear Solid, PlayStation 1.
It's a good pick.
Like that one, you know, that was the one that changed it for me as far as what video games were and where they were going, so.
Do you ever go back and play Ghost House?
No.
No.
I have all my Sega Master System games, but I, for some reason, sold the system. And I don't want to get my dad to get up in the attic and send me the games and then eBay a system and whatever.
You can just get it all on eBay. Your dad doesn't have to go in any attic anymore.
But I have the games, okay, so forget it. I don't want to spend the 13 cents to get the Sega Master System.
Great. I have a second answer. My favorite thing, one of my favorite things to happen on PSN is bringing back PS1 era RPGs.
Yeah?
I played Grandia and Suikoden, and I played all those games again back when I, and like, I always play them, and I'm like, I'm going to play through this whole thing, but then it turns out I'm not 16 anymore and don't have the time.
Yeah, I know. So that was my thing with Super Metroid, right? Like, we did the video, you and I, about your favorite game of all time, Super Metroid. I went home and got it on Virtual Console. Totally had a fun playing it, and then, like, you know, stopped. Like, I'm never going to have time to go through and sit down and dedicate to it. There's Mario Golf to play.
Yeah. Grandia's the best. Best battle system of all time in an RPG.
What about Suikoden 2? You're not excited about that?
I am excited about that, yeah. It's going to be great. Yeah.
Mr. Rans, do you have a next-gen console?
Yes.
Xbox One or PS4?
PS4.
Here you go. You can have this controller.
That's a controller from evilcontrollers.com. You can go customize yours.
That's awesome.
And I also put the toasty sticker on there. Sorry about that.
He hasn't been on GameScoop in a long time, but Rob the Robot used to be a fairly popular...
Oh, my God, Rob the Robot.
Fairly popular guest.
He had hard times.
Yeah, he fell on hard times. We actually have a clip of one of his most famous appearances that we're going to cut to right now.
Of course, Hillary put up a review of Assassin's Creed this week. The review has been somewhat controversial. Many a fanboy had his poor little heart broken. So, anyway, but now for another take, for some insight, some commentary on Hillary's review is Rob the Robot. Rob, I know you've read Hillary's review. What do you think? Do you think his review is fair?
All I know is that Jade Raymond is a beautiful human being, and that this makes this game perfect. I mean, everybody knows that when you play a stealth action game, it should always end with 2 hours of you just fighting guys out in the open. that's what assassins do. Were you back in that time, Greg?
I was not.
No, no.
I'm just afraid you're going to steal my
You don't even know how to fly a dragon.
come on now. That was before Jerusalem times.
Obviously, you don't know the secrets about the Jewish people. Here's my rating score for Assassin's Creed. 0110110110110. That's also my phone number, Jade Raymond.
This is why we don't invite you back. You're being a bad robot.
Bad robot.
When you drink this much, you remind me of my father.
Rob the robot is your father.
That isn't true! That's impossible!
School!
F*** you, Rob. God, I hate you, Dad.
You are the greatest disappointment of Rob's life.
You live in a box behind IGN.
I'm in your kitchen.
Wow.
Special thanks to Javi Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Yeah?
You animated a whole bunch of those for us. You find them on IGN, YouTube.
We actually have another one that we'll show in a few more minutes here. We're going to go to Twitter now. Remember, you can tweet your questions at me at DameZero, just like Nicholas Trammell did. Justin... Greg,
yeah.
Only because I don't think Brian's played yet. Is Hearthstone worth buying an iPad for? He asks.
Ooh, doctor.
So Hearthstone's a free game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it worth $500?
Yeah, I was going to say, no, it's not. Like, Hearthstone is a potential Game of the Year candidate, for sure. It's the game I played the most over the last 6 months. It is not worth buying a $500 iPad for.
I love Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's free to play on your PC, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You get your Mac, just play it on your PC.
You have some device you're running.
Surely you have some sort of computer in your possession that you can play this game on.
We should let people know that iPads also do other things. It's kind of important.
It's always such a weird question, though, because no game is worth buying, just that by itself, worth buying a console.
Super Mario 64, N64, you're wrong.
Super Mario World, SNES. I bought an SNES, I played Super Mario World, unlocked everything, put the SNES away. Never played another SNES. It was after the fact. I had a Sega Genesis. Gotta get Genesis. Might have heard of that.
No, you were not doing that.
You were told Jamie Earl.
You were saying, though, that you think iPad's the best way to play Hearthstone.
It's my favorite way. I have heard the caveat is that on an iPad 2, it's like a little bit slower as some of the older ones.
I use an iPad 2. It's not terrible.
Is it fine?
It's fine.
It's playable, but it's just
A
little slower.
Like, I have an iPad Air, and I actually prefer playing that way instead of a PC. Everyone, I've heard a lot of people like, I don't know if I should download Hearthstone. Should I try it? Just download it and try it. Like, the tutorial's super awesome. Like, it's fun, and, like, it ramps you into the game really slowly, and you'll know. You'll know by the end of, like, those five battles whether this is a game you're digging or not. So don't be afraid.
Here's my one thing about it, and I need you as experts to tell me.
We are.
Is there ever going to be an offline mode?
No.
There's a single player. What do you mean offline?
I have to be connected to the internet to play Hearthstone of any kind, which is a total deal breaker for me. I play my mobile games on the train.
Oh, on the train.
Yeah, so that's like, okay. I come home and I want to do other things, play something on the screen.
This actually is a scoop, because I talked to Blizzard. They had an event for the iPad version, and I said, is there going to be an offline mode? And they said no, because you got to be connected to Battle.net.
I see. Mm. Yep. Well, then. You can buy my iPad pretty cheap.
The flip side is, it is eventually coming to iPhone and Android,
uh-huh.
And
then you'll be on a cell. The LTE network.
Yeah. That Verizon, 4G.
No, I don't know about that.
Nicholas Trammell, we are going to send you one of these limited edition laser cells of Watch Dogs, and a copy of Watch Dogs the Game, and a Watch Dogs t-shirt.
Are we tossing in a Toasty sticker too?
Yeah, we'll send them the Game Scoop sticker.
The package is already going out, we might as well give it to them.
I know. We need to make note of this. I don't have a way to make note of this winner, so somebody needs
Eric
to.
Martin's on it.
Okay, Eric Martin, hopefully.
Nicholas. Eric Martin, shout out, you on it?
I'm on it.
Yeah, he is.
He's on it.
Everybody follow Eric on Twitter. It's like
There's an R in there.
Great name, Eric.
Good luck with that.
We're lucky to have one of our super fans here in the studio with us today. This is Big Tony Style.
Big Tony Style!
If you comment on IGN articles and videos, you may see his screen name down there. He's a very frequent commenter.
Definitely. Well, congratulations and thanks for the absurd amount of content you guys put out just from Game Scoop to everything. So, my question, sort of going back to gaming growing up, we have new generations of gamers, you know, all the time, young kids that their first introduction to games is just iPhone or whatever. What is it about your experiences growing up that you think gamers nowadays will never get to experience that you absolutely loved?
I mean, like, it sounds stupid, right? But it would be like narrative advancement, right? Like, when you play Legend of Zelda and it's 8-bit and you're getting this and you're just getting little dialogue, you're putting so much more into, I think, what the character is and what they sound like and where you're what they are. Like, the limitations of those games, I think, now that they aren't there, like, people expect things to be voice acted, right? It was a big deal with the last Zelda game that people were like, well, and I know this is probably for every Zelda game. Like, why isn't there a voice actor? And that's not what this game is.
The technical limitations thing is a great answer. I mean, it's a reason Super Mario has a mustache, right? It's because they tried to make him with a nose and a mouth, and they're like, I can't fit a mouth.
Yeah.
Give him a mustache. And he's got a mustache now, like, decades later. It's really crazy, and you don't have to really work in those limitations anymore. And I think that confining an artist in limitations like that makes them do more creative things.
Sure.
If you look at the music, obviously, we were talking about earlier, I mean, they just had that tiny little chipset, and they're like, well, I got to make a whole soundtrack with these beeps and boops, and I'm going to do it.
And it sounded amazing.
And it sounded amazing.
I mean, you figure, like, when I played Ghostbusters on the Sega Master System, the definitive Sega console, I'm lost that experience, and it's like I'm watching the Ghostbusters movie, and then the Ghostbusters game comes out on PS3, and it's like, well, the textures on this wall aren't that great.
Yeah.
It's totally pulled me out of the experience. Like, there's... Once you get a taste of how great things can be, it's hard to go back.
Right.
I think, like, you put that cart into the game, and then that's your experience. Like, you're focused on... Yeah. I don't know why this is my specific memory. I was a Genesis kid growing up, too, and I had,
gotta get Genesis.
I had Vector Man 2.
Absolutely. Oh, Vector Man 2!
And, like, that game's not great.
No.
Like, that's my, like, you put the card in, and, like, now, but you said you have a niece or nephew, I think it is, that's flipping through iPad games every 5 seconds. Yeah. Like, he's doing one thing in one
no
game.
He has no patience.
He'll, yeah.
like,
he can't just,
play Angry Birds for, like, 30 seconds, and he's like, I want to download a new game. Like,
yeah.
That's what's going to, like, drive me crazy when I have kids. Yeah. It's like, just play the one... Just play the game. Play the game and play it.
Exactly. Like, I don't think...
David's girlfriend's in the audience. Get out.
Do you think... So I'm having a kid soon. And my plan... Thank you.
Yeah, that's
just, so David, just
announcing it here.
Feel free to do that to his kid.
Yeah. You can't babysit anymore. It's scary. I think I want to start her on the NES.
Yeah.
Like, that's important, right? Like, do you guys ever, have any of you three given this
I've talked about this extensively before, and I agree with you, but it's also like taking a kid to school on a horse. And being like, one day you'll appreciate cars.
She has to have an appreciation of the classics.
No, she doesn't have to.
She does. It's important to me.
That's selfish. That's different than she yeah. has to. That's you have to.
I just feel like I'd be so disappointed if, like, we, you know, start her on the PS4 or whatever. She's playing Lego or, you know, other mm-hmm. games that are appropriate for kids. And then I say, you know, this is Daddy's favorite game. And she's like, this is dumb and weird and I don't like it. And then I'd be mad.
That's ridiculous. That's like if I was watching Indiana Jones when I was a kid and my dad grabbed yeah. me and hit me in the back of the head and he's like, you're gonna watch silent films for it's not fair.
You make a good point there.
Okay.
Plus, do you have like an NES ready to go?
We own one. I mean, it's not ready to go. We have a little ways to go before that.
When your daughter gets sick, are you gonna give her leeches?
But you don't think when you have kids, are you going to show her the...
I'm totally...
Are you going to show her the new Star Wars movies
yeah, like,
or episode
so like,
4, 5,
no,
6?
No, so that's... Hold on.
Plus, should you have a child, like, what hip-hop record do you play for them first?
Yeah! How old's the child?
I'm just saying, you could be like...
Exactly, you're going to play something that's like
yo,
awesome
this is
and
Nicki Minaj.
Happy second birthday, here's Enter the 36 Chambers by Wu-Tang Clan. You don't get a lot of these drug selling references yet, but you will someday. Hopefully not.
I'm just enjoying the show.
Have we sufficiently answered your question? Okay.
Yeah.
I got a little.
I guess, whatever.
Yeah. We have another Twitter question here. This is from Jefferson Ferguson. Wants to know what food item found in a video game do you wish were real?
That's really weird.
Mario's mushroom or Skooma or Nuka-Cola.
I always wanted the street pizza from Ninja Turtle games.
Damn it, I was going to say that.
Or I was going to say like those turkey
the pizza
legs
always looks so good.
You got the whole pie on the street and you walk by, you eat it. Yeah. Eat the whole pie yourself. Your friends can't have any. They're all mad and they die. Yeah. It's the best.
You also walk over it to eat it.
Yeah, that's strange. Your foot touches it, and it's in your... You're a mutant turtle.
And yes, 8-bit food is weird. There's the wall, like, turkey in Castlevania.
Yep.
That's kind of a weird thing.
Time. I'm being told we don't have enough time to roll the last clip, but I think we can just roll. Like, we go a little bit over noon. Is anybody...
I really hope we don't run into the next IGN piece of live programming in the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Mad Men's on after this or something.
We can run a few minutes over here, right?
Yeah. Chocobo.
You want to eat chocobo?
Yeah.
That's not a food.
I like chicken wings.
As long as it's not a food, you cook it and you eat it.
It's an animal.
Food.
Bam!
All right.
Animals are food.
Gotta eat.
Team fat.
It's true. You know, I don't want to eat those toilet pineapples from BioShock Infinite.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Right, or the corpse potatoes.
When you have only $300 in your inventory and they're selling hot dogs on the beach, I'll go for the toilet pineapple every time.
I always thought it was weird in Final Fight where the mayor's walking around without a shirt and he's eating street food.
Yeah. He's like, oh, he's a man of the people. That's how he got elected.
His car.
I'm Mike Hagger, and I'm just like you. I hate shirts, and I love free food.
Eric, let's take note of this. Jefferson Ferguson is winning a copy of the limited edition Laser Cell and a copy of Watch Dogs and a Watch Dogs t-shirt. We still have one more cell, one more copy of the game, and a PlayStation 4 and a limited edition copy of Watch Dogs. But first, we're going to roll our last clip. This is another Javi Rodriguez animated clip.
Joint, we call him.
Here we go. Yeah.
This is the same BS.
I feel so much better now.
Playing 6 days in Fallujah, my most anticipated game of 2008. Still waiting.
It was supposed to be 2009, wasn't it?
I don't care.
There was some controversy about the Taliban in Medal of Honor.
Controversy is how I would
controversy.
You.
Controversy.
Yeah.
Electronic Arts apparently caved the controversy.
The what?
The controversy.
Oh.
So all they did is just change the name of of the multiplayer
which is
team,
dumb.
And it only applies to the multiplayer game. In the single player, there's still gonna be the Taliban soldiers, but you play as U.S. forces, of course.
And now that there's just an opposing force that's shooting people in the head, shooting American soldiers in the face.
When you put it that way, that sounds crazy, right?
Yeah, right.
It's not okay for the Taliban to shoot American soldiers. It's okay for an opposing force.
I'm going to play it just so I can scream at people on the Taliban.
On the Taliban.
Hey, I tricked you. I'm not really an opposing force at all. I'm the Taliban. Here comes my mech.
That's awesome technology.
They do. I've only seen Iron Man. I'm basing it all.
That's funny, Greg. You got a funny idea in your head.
No, I know. I'm fine.
Feel free to share with the class.
All right, so they'd come up on the one Taliban guy. He'd be like, oh, I'm giving up. I'm sorry. And then he'd go, I'm not an opposing force. I'm the Taliban. And you see those mountains behind me? Those are robot boobs. And this giant robot sits up and starts swiping at the American soldiers. You're so dumb.
Yeah. You don't want to get locked in here. You don't want to know what's going on.
Like I've always said, Greg just reaches into a black hole.
Yeah.
Whatever he pulls out, that's what he's making a joke about.
No filter.
No.
This Twitter question comes from Devlin.
Devlin.
He says, considering the positive reception of South Park and Octodad, could you see dedicated comedy become a mainstream genre in gaming?
I think you'll definitely see it explored more, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the big part. Like, for years it hadn't been done well because I think people are trying to struggle to put comedy into a video game box that's what they know, right? Yeah, and when those walls fall down, you're like, just make a South Park story. We'll make the gameplay work. Or, like, Octodad's not trying to be funny in the sense of, like, here's a zany one-liner. It's like, the concept is you are an octopus and you have been pretending for 20 years you're a person.
And it's slapstick, right?
Yeah.
Like if I took your glasses and I just waved them around the room for 10 minutes, like that's basically the game. It's ridiculous.
That doesn't sound very good at all when you describe it like that.
Thank God for indie games. So comedy's all about timing, right? And video games are about doing things in your own time.
Right, it's impossible.
So it's very difficult to get that to gel perfectly. So with South Park, I mean, there was dedicated comedy writers behind it, which I think helps immensely.
Right.
But if the joke starts and then for 10 minutes I'm just standing there because I don't want to move my character, then the punchline's very late. So it's finding that and getting that to mesh, and I'd love to see more of that happen.
Actually have a feature about this going up on IGN soon that I'm helping edit, and we interviewed the guy that made Octodad. And what's interesting about those two examples is that they're the exact opposite, where like South Park takes a very traditional idea of comedy and totally makes it work in a video game. Like they worked really hard on it, it took years, it almost killed them, and it's awesome, it's hilarious. Whereas Octodad is like comedy that only makes sense in the context of video games. Like it's players creating their own kind of emergent slapstick comedy through like the way that he put it, the Octodad creator put it, was that like when you want your character to do something but he actually does something else, sort of like a goat simulator sort of situation, right, as well, like that creates these comedic situations that were unintended. Like it's sort of like taking what used to be glitches and it would be really funny when a character did something dumb or silly, but now building like layering comedy,
building a whole game out of it. It's really awesome to see that happen.
Devlin wins the limited edition laser cell print from Watch Dogs. This limited edition GameScoop Xbox One controller.
EvilController.com.
Yeah. I think that's it. Yep, that's it.
All right.
Our last question today comes from His Name is JoJo.
His name is JoJo.
His name is JoJo.
Yes.
How'd we do that?
What's that his name? To?
JoJo?
That was right at the end, JoJo?
Yes, how did GameScoop come about, and did you think it would ever be this big of a series? Before I worked at IGN, I listened to a bunch of gaming podcasts from 1UP, and I tried listening to the GameSpot one. No offense, I just couldn't get into it.
None of those people still work there, so no offense is taken.
No one's offended.
But I really
like
them
telling us, we didn't like your review of some PS1.
Greg Kasavin's so upset right now somewhere.
But IGN was my favorite gaming site, and they did podcasts sporadically. It was just like every once in a while.
IGN was AFK. Wasn't that happening too?
That we started that afterwards. Yeah, they didn't have a regular podcast series. So when I was hired, I wanted to start a regular podcast. I was hired as a news and features editor, so it made sense to do a news podcast. Pretty quickly on, I don't know, I started realizing that we started like growing this fan base, and I started hearing from fans on the regular, like Matt Jones.
He
was there from the beginning, yeah, Overlord of the Superfans.
That's way before Twitter, right? So you don't really know, you have stats.
Yeah, so we set up this email account, gamescoop@ign.com, that people could email their questions in, and then questions actually started coming in, and that was the only way I knew that anybody was listening to the show. So it's been really cool. Actually, on a personal note, creating and hosting Gamescoop has been the thing I am most proud of in my career. So thank you to everybody. Honestly, really good. However you enjoy the show, if you still listen to the podcast, if you watch the videos on IGN or on YouTube, really, thank you. It's awesome. You're the reason why I get to keep doing this, so it's really great. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm sorry. His name is Joji, also wins the PlayStation 4. And,
He's going to get two of these GameScoop Toasty stickers, too, then. His controller.
And the limited edition of Watch Dogs. So. Any notes before we sign off here today?
This is great, and I'm incredibly proud of you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing for me is the thank you.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's all three of you have been at IGN much longer than me, and I'm very honored and blessed. And this is, someone asked me, if money didn't matter, you could do whatever you wanted and get paid for it, what would you do? And it would probably be this. It's awesome.
Yeah. I feel very lucky to do what we do.
For sure.
Yeah. It's awesome. I feel very lucky that we can we're friends just talking about video games, and you guys want to come and hang out with us. That's all. That blows my mind every single day. It's very, very cool. So thank you for joining us today. Give yourself a round of applause. Thank you for tuning in. GameScoop 300 episodes in. We'll see where it goes from here. It's very exciting. If you like the live format, let me know. That's on the table. Maybe GameScoop could just be a live show every week. I don't know. Maybe every day.
Don't say that.
Maybe all day.
Mike Aransky's putting the gun in his mouth.
It's true.
Do it.
Jesus.
No. Not the murder. He means do the show every day.
That's not what you do with suicidal people.
I meant the show, man.
Okay.
The show, yeah.
Mike Aransky is a family provider.
So, thank you, Justin. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Brian. Thank you to all of you joining us here today. Thank you for all of you tuning in. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out. Come get some. Beware.
IGN GameScoop. Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.